Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Nice little holiday break you and I took.
Yep. I forgot what the name of the podcast was. I remembered your name. I remembered most of my name.
I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know what sport we cover.
Well, right now there's no sport. So, I mean, there is sort of some news, but we're in like the same spot we were, you know, last time we recorded. So, yay.
So we'll catch up on sort of the no news is at least some news. We have Dodgers Rewind. We have 5 questions from our friend Craig. All of that after this. All right, Eric, let me be blunt. Is there a labor crisis in baseball today?
No. I mean, I don't know. So we were talking about this. It's more of a labor annoyance right now.
Carl.
Would you say
it depends on how you define crisis?
Sure. It's a crisis-tunity.
Okay.
to quote Homer Simpson. But yeah, so we last recorded before Christmas back in 2021, a year ago. It was 37 days ago. That seems like a long time because it is just over 5 weeks. However, that's not as long as it took for Major League Baseball, the owner side, in between their offers to the players. So they last met on December 1st. It was like an in-person thing in Dallas, last ditch sort of effort, and it wasn't very productive. The owners made an offer there. Players also, I believe, had something on the table. And then the CBA expired that night. MLB was locked out. You might remember Commissioner Rob Manfred in a statement called it a defensive lockout that was very necessary. And his quote, one of his quotes in the long meandering letter to the fans was, "We hope that the lockout will jumpstart the negotiations and get us to an agreement that will allow the season to start on time." And those negotiations were so jump-started that it took 43 days for Major League Baseball to make its next offer. And, like, not much. They made an offer on the 13th of January. That was a week ago. We're recording this on the 20th. I'm not going to go into details because, like, there's going to be more stuff, I'm sure, next week. But there's just not a lot there. It's both. How do I put this? They're far apart on a lot of stuff, but at the same time, it's the framework of a lot of the things are still there. Like, there's still going to be a luxury tax. There's still going to be, you know, the minimum is going to go up by a certain amount. It's just a lot of these. It's literally they're just going to have to figure out like the amounts. Like, they don't seem structurally that far off. There is some stuff, like one of the things about the owner's, I guess, proposal in December was they straight up told the players, per like multiple reports, like Evan Drellick, and Jeff Passan, others have reported that the owners said like they wouldn't even consider anything from the players that included like a reduction of time till free agency, or a reduction of time to arbitration, or a change in revenue sharing. And it's like, those are big things. And like, those should be part of negotiations. And so it's not serious at this point, which is why it's frustrating. So Evan Drellick, the aforementioned at The Athletic on Thursday, he sort of characterized it in a column. He's been really good at, in terms of both breaking and interpreting and presenting news on the labor front. He's excellent. You should follow him. His column basically said the owners are trying to test the players' resolve. They're being stubborn little ninnies. He didn't write that. I'm using that. They're still far apart. We're recording this on a Thursday. Further reports today. It's actually good because we were going to record earlier in the week, and some stuff, like minor stuff, has happened, but it's informed our podcast a little more. So today we just learned that multiple reports, the players plan to meet this time in person next Monday. You know, the committees, the group that does the negotiating, they're going to meet next Monday. So there's going to be a counter from the players, but that's actual, like, real negotiations. So maybe they can get started, but it's all frustrating because no, I we all expected it to take a while. We're getting to the point where pitchers and catchers in a normal spring would report around mid-February. I think February 16th, I think, is the earliest date teams could have asked for pitchers and catchers. I haven't seen dates reported, although mostly because teams aren't bothering to, like, even release that because, right. You know, what's the point? But, I think everyone sort of accepted there's going to be a shorter spring in some capacity. Now, so the closer we get to that, then it starts to get more real. But even then, you're not missing real games. There is a cost of missing a lot of the some of the spring revenue in terms of, like, teams' relationships with cities.
Think of how many ties we're going to miss because of this, Eric.
This is the real tragedy here. This is what we're getting at. We need to do a podcast just on the ties that they're real casualties of the labor negotiations. So, yeah. So it's just like it's going to take, like, until they get closer to that, and really until it's, like, closer to March when they're like, we really have to get stuff done. And then it starts to get more serious, and you just hope that things will happen before that, you know, to sort of grease the skids a little bit. Now, looking back on our last episode, which, again, 37 days ago, we made a bet. Craig asked us.
Shorter than it took for an offer.
Yes,
today.
Exactly.
That's pretty good.
When will the 2022 regular season start? I said April 1st in my infinite wisdom, thinking that was opening day. But in fact, it's March 31st. So I've given myself wiggle room like a pro. but you said June 1st. I still think I'm going to win this.
So we've decided that May 1st is the cutoff, right? If it's May 1st, it's a push.
Yeah. No, technically,
you're
I
May
win
1st? Okay.
because May is 31 days.
Got it.
So yeah, that so I could just say that was my real reason.
So
for
what happens
first,
if it so. Starts like say May 2nd in Japan, but May 1st here? That's a push. Can we say that?
Oh, like not only does the season start May 1st, but they add a Japan series.
Yeah.
Ooh. You know what? I will give you that one.
All right. If
it starts May 2nd in Japan, it's yours.
All right.
So that's sort of the backdrop of all this. So there's not like, you know, 40-man type player news, anything like that, anything on the labor front.
It's going to start May 2nd in Korea. You realize that, right? And you're going to claim it.
Yep. And it's going to be like, it's going to be, oh, baseball's first regular season game in Germany. And I'm going to be like, yeah, you sucker. You didn't lay it out. But yeah, no. So yeah, that's where we're at. But there was some, like, you know, I think a reasonable amount of news, like, just relatively, like, as much of that type of stuff as you can get with no player stuff. But some of the people who are, like, responsible for sort of aligning, acquiring, managing these players that the Dodgers will eventually get and or sign and or trade, that aspect is sort of changed a little bit, or just a little bit more clarified. So Brandon Gomes, he's been the assistant GM the last 3 years. He's been in the organization in the baseball ops in some capacity the last 5 years. He was promoted to general manager. It was a position the Dodgers hadn't technically filled since Farhan Zaidi left. So the last 3 seasons, they didn't have a GM, but they still have, like, a pretty robust front office. You know, like, Andrew Friedman's still the top dog president of baseball operations, but there's a lot of people, they describe it, I think accurately so, as a very collaborative group. And, like, it's still going to be a lot of the same people with some new ones also. But Gomes just has a little more responsibility now. So, like, I'll talk about that in a second. But just to backstory on Gomes, he was pitching in the majors in 2015 with the Rays. All 5 of his major league seasons were with the Rays. Friedman acquired him in Tampa Bay in the winter meetings in 2010, or maybe just after it, that December. Gomes is only 37 now. He is 4 months older than Justin Turner. So I guess he could actually sign Pujols and then just to have someone older than him on the roster. But as of now, he is still older than everyone. So the Mets were rumored to be interested in Gomes during their, like, you know, running through the Rolodex of everyone trying to look for a GM. That probably helped a little bit. Andrew Friedman said today was the press conference introducing Gomes as GM. Friedman said over the last 5 years, because when he first joined the Dodgers, it was as pitching coordinator. So there's some major league stuff in there. Director of Pitcher Performance, I believe was his title. So just sort of working with the entire like pitching R&D group and working with players, things like that. He was actually a team asked to interview Gomes to be a major league pitching coach. Over the last few years, a couple teams asked for permission to interview him for assistant general manager and also as general manager. He didn't say which teams. I'm assuming the Mets were one of those. And Gomes or the Dodgers in some cases, or the Dodgers usually don't if it was a promotion, but Gomes stayed here the whole time. And I think part of it was that he got this raise. I'm sure that helped. Now the structure is still, like I said, pretty robust. They still have, so like, Friedman at the top, president of baseball operations. Josh Burns, a former GM himself, is a senior vice president. He does more of the player development side, so maybe he's probably working a little more with minor leaguers, but it's all like under the same umbrella. They also have another assistant GM, Jeff Kingston, who's been here for a few years. They also promoted Alex Slater. He was director of baseball ops. This is just like a title thing, so he's assistant GM as well now. Slater, I believe, was one the person who originally in the group discussion, if you will, said, hey, what if we use an opener in game 5 of the NLDS? And everyone sort of was like, what about? And then they sort of talked it out. So love him or hate him for that. It's not like he's just certainly done other things, but he's now an assistant GM. The Dodgers also hired someone from the outside, Damon Jones. He was with the Nats for 13 years through 2019. The last 2 years, he's been with the Washington football team in the NFL. He is assistant general manager, but also a baseball legal counsel. So he just has a pretty extensive background in that. Probably will come in handy. Friedman said today, Jones, when he was with WFT, locked the gates. So he said, what did he say? Oh, in the 2 years ago, Jones helped the Dodgers as like a consultant on an arbitration case. He didn't say which case. That year, they only went to 2 hearings. They did have a few other people. They ended up extending Max Muncy before a hearing, and they signed Chris Taylor before a hearing. So there could have been like a quartet, those two or Jock Peterson with the Dodgers won that case, or Pedro Baez, the Dodgers lost that case. So he didn't say which person.
I'm a little bummed that this wasn't the trivia question, because I remembered it. I remember the two arbitration cases.
Yeah, I loved that. You know what? I'll give you that as a win. That's a trivia win.
I knew it was Jock, and Pedro would have been a guess, but it was my first guess.
So, and my favorite part about the Chris Taylor contract, this is now 2 Chris Taylor contracts ago. He signed for his last 2 years of arbitration, and he earned $5.6 million in 2020 and then $7.8 million in 2021. And the lead for the Associated Press story on this, I'm going to butcher it, but it essentially was like the Dodgers and Chris Taylor stayed in step, with their, most recent deal. 5, 6, 7, 8, and I was like, "Oh yes, this is the perfect, this is the greatest story I've ever read," and so I was enamored. So yeah, so back to the sort of the role. This came up earlier in the week. I guess it was when they announced the hiring on Tuesday. Back when Farhan Zaidi was hired, it's crazy how things have evolved in a few years. But literally, like, a lot of the talk, there was like a meeting in the Dodgers offices. It wasn't a press conference. It was just like in a conference room. There was a bunch of reporters. I was there. And so much of the tone and some of the literal questions were, yeah, but let's say another team calls. Who's answering the phone? You guys have all these GMs. Like, what are you doing? Like, who's in charge, you know, like it was just, people couldn't wrap their heads around like this concept of having multiple people like doing things. And it was very bizarre. And that's, so it was just very weird. So it's very collaborative, right? Like I said, this is Friedman today on what Gomes's role will be now that he's GM instead of AGM. Friedman said, I think it's just a partnership. Things will change throughout the months and the years, and things will ebb and flow. I think just through communication, we'll figure out what makes the most sense at any given time. Obviously, he will touch all aspects of the baseball operations department, and we'll kind of figure out how to divide and conquer. So I think a lot of that, you're involved in so many things. Sometimes it might be contract negotiations. Sometimes it might be like, maybe for a couple weeks, you know, Gomes is the point man in terms of making sure the right people get called up and sent down, or, you know, roster management, things like that. Or I'm certain there's more and more things. So, like, who knows? But I think it's going to be a lot of what Gomes was already doing, but maybe just more of it, and maybe just a little casting a wider net. An interesting thing about Gomes, this is stretching the definition of interesting, but he has the highest on-base percentage in the Major League on-base percentage of any Dodgers GM in history. It's 500. He walked once in his two plate appearances. He also has the lowest ERA, career ERA of 4.20 in 167 innings. Tommy Lasorda, who was briefly GM during the tumultuous 1998 season, 6.48 career ERA. Dave Wallace, also during that tumultuous period, 7.84 major league ERA. So Brandon Gomes, basically the Shohei Ohtani of GMs, and he's yeah, it's that's what we have. So yeah. Do you have any thoughts on Gomes here?
I remember I asked you, man, at some point, like, are the Dodgers ever going to hire a GM? And you were dismissive of the fact. So I'm happy. I don't know. There might have been a time frame in there. You might have, you know, that might have been like last off season. I was wondering if they were ever going to do this.
We have to probably go back. I don't know if we ever classified it as a bet, but I'm sure.
No,
it was
I'm sure.
Like,
yeah, we didn't.
I'm just like, no,
I just always remember thinking like, oh, this is a thing they'll get that for sure they'll do next off season, and they just like
it does seem it did seem weird. Ever, I think initially I thought like, oh yeah, they'll get a GM, like, you know.
It kind of makes sense that like if it's already a collaborative process, and instead you're just viewing it as kind of like a tool in your back pocket to keep somebody you really want to keep, yeah, or to prize someone you really want to prize. So, yeah, you know, the fact that they thought Gomes was worthy of this, hopefully we'll have him on the show, right?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't come on the show? So
that's true. So the other sort of newsy type thing, and is that it's prospect season. We started our own like community rankings. A little over a week and a half ago, we asked the readers at True Blue LA to submit their top three prospects, and then from that we sort of did a rank vote. And there were 12 different names listed, so we're going to profile each one. David Hood is actually writing the profiles, though. We've put a few up already, so those will be fun. We're going to reveal those over the now,
people we actually might have on the show. Yeah. We do have to have David on again.
Yeah, no question.
Maybe maybe when all the profiles are out.
Yeah, I think in March, because he's also going to put his own rankings out at some point.
That's good timing.
So yeah, it's perfect.
Not that there's
a lot
be
of the usual.
On, so
we'll get an idea who they are, because also the national publications are starting to put out their prospect list, mm-hmm, both team specific and league wide. Baseball America put their top 100 list out Wednesday. Baseball Prospectus did their top 101 on Thursday. There's three people that are listed in both. Like the Dodgers actually had five people in the BA list and four in the BP list. But Diego Cartaya, Venezuelan catcher who just turned 20, he is listed in both. He was the highest ranked in Baseball America. Miguel Vargas, third baseman, who is he was 21 last year. Excellent hitter. He was the highest on BP. He's in both. And then also Bobby Miller, their pitcher, who they drafted in the first round out of Louisville in 2020. He's listed on both lists so far. There'll be more, you know, rankings coming out. I believe the Baseball Prospectus team list will be out Friday by the time you listen to this. So, yeah, so we'll have an idea. Also, the international signing period started on January 15th. So far, the Dodgers have signed 32 players. You know the deal. It's such a gross system. Like, you got a lot of, not everyone's 16, but you have to be 16. But so, a lot of these deals are signed well in advance. So, you're literally, it's literally like predatory. So the Dodgers had among, like, this is one of the things, speaking of CBA stuff, the draft is well, hard capped is a strong word. There's immense penalties, but the international spending is really a hard cap. And then, like, different teams have lower amounts. The Dodgers actually have the lowest bonus pool. It was about $4.6 million. It would have been about 5.1, but they had to reduce it by 500,000 for signing Trevor Bauer. So, just another notch in the belt for that signing. So the notable players the Dodgers signed, at least the players who were ranked, there's an outfielder from the Dominican Republic, Samuel Munoz. He was ranked number 7 by MLB Pipeline. He was also in the BA top 50, I think in the 40s, I want to say. Oh, I believe that was ranked by potential highest bonus. Didn't see an actual bonus figure for him. But then a Venezuelan right-handed pitcher, Asimius Morales, he was ranked 37 by MLB Pipeline. But yeah, check back in 5 years. We'll see how some of these are, because a lot of these guys are super young. My trivia for you is prospect-related, and I'm going to ask you to name every single prospect.
No, all right.
Yeah, so the Dodgers, they have 5 prospects on the preseason Baseball America Top 100.
True.
Dating back, you got it. Yeah. You're supposed to wait till we go to break.
Oh, no, sorry.
Dating back to at least 2010, this is as long as I've been tracking it. I could have gone back further. I didn't. But I'm pretty sure all time, I don't think they've had a higher number. Actually, maybe they might have. But let's just say since 2010. What's the highest number of prospects the Dodgers had in the preseason top 100 in 1 year? Bonus, how many of those prospects can you name if you think you have the year right?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot after this. All right, what's the most prospects the Dodgers have had in a single year on the Baseball America list? That what I'm answering here?
Yeah, since 2010.
No, I'm going to do all time, and I'm going to say 9.
You know what? I'm giving you that one.
Yeah. This is full cheating. During the break, Eric and I browsed the list because I was pretty sure. As soon as you said, I think all time, I'm like, that's after the sort of...
I brain farted about the...
the Jacksonville five,
yeah, exactly,
kind of era where I remembered them having a lot, and they had 9 in that. So, but to answer your question, I'm going to actually confess to cheating again, because I think you tweeted this answer, and I saw that tweet, which was 7, I think. Twice? 2 different times?
Maybe, but what do you think? Unless you start naming names.
I scanned the list and then didn't recall exactly. Corey Seager was on one of them lists.
In fact, it is 7. You were right, and it was 2 different years. I'll give you the years just to see how many prospects you can name. 2016 and 2020.
Seager.
Mm-hmm.
Bellinger.
Yep.
That's
Bellinger
it.
Bellinger was 5th in 2016 among Dodgers on this list.
Jock Peterson?
Not 2016.
Well, going either year. Is he not?
No.
Sorry. Yeah.
So he was twice on the top 100, including as high as number 8 in 15.
Got it. Oh, man. I was probably just looking at every prospect and not noting what year. I'm a bad cheater, Eric.
Yep.
Urias.
Yep. Seager and Urias. Seager was 1. Urias was 4 in 2016. It was stacked.
Where are we? That's too long ago, Eric. I was a young lad. I was still in high school, I think.
You want to give 2020 a shot? You might have a pretty good number, pretty good thing there.
Yeah, if I wasn't completely exhausted.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I'll give you a hint. One One of them is a current Dodger who's ranked.
A current Dodger who's ranked. Let me scan that list real quick. While I do that, Will Smith?
Nope, he didn't. He made it in 2019 as number 95.
Du-du-du-du-du. Cheating again. Bush the one that was no.
Nope. He was
Vargas.
Nope.
Man. I'm a tired man apparently. No, I'm gonna tap out. I'm done yelling names at my screen.
Okay, I'm just gonna name some of the. Okay, I'll just name the ones you missed. 2016, Jose De Leon.
Yep.
And then the Baseball America sort of cheatery way. They're just very technical. Kenta Maeda. Grant Holmes.
That was a name I had in my back pocket, and I just didn't throw it out there. My bad.
And then Alex Verdugo. Sure. In 2016. 2020, Gavin Lux was number 4.
Mm-hmm.
Opening day starter Dustin May was number 20.
Yep.
Bruiser Gratterall, 60. Yep. Caber Ruiz was 81. This is Caber Ruiz's fifth year in the top 100. He's I think 19 with the Nationals now. So he's been around a while. Tony Gonsolin, 82. Josiah Gray, 84. Diego Cartaya is the one who is ranked this year. Wow. He was 97. Yeah,
I had him as I had 2020 is a. I almost joked about this when you noted that Farhan Zaidi left 3 years ago, and I'm like, that is a lie.
Right.
This has been like, one long year.
Yeah, 2020 seems
it's so really
close, but also so long.
When you've listed all these names, I'm like, I was like, the Mookie Betts trade had happened. Dustin May was still a process. Like, none of that made any sense to me. So
Mookie Betts is like a veteran, Dodger veteran now.
Soon as I started to think of what 2020 existed as, I'm like, man, I've got a better shot than 2016 names. Just because I can't do 2020, Eric. I can't.
Yeah. Yep.
Because we're in 2020 part 3 right now.
Yep. We are in. What is this? I forgot the date. It's like March 667 today or whatever the day is. Like 2020.
You want to take a stab at the 9 names in 2006? There's some good ones here. You already looked at the list. You know some of them.
I only saw a couple because it wasn't loading.
Yeah.
But so the ones I saw were Joel Guzman, Andy LaRoche, and Chad Billingsley.
Yeah, Joel Guzman at 26, Andy LaRoche at 19. Chad Billingsley, one ahead of Justin Verlander, Billingsley at 7, Verlander at 8.
Who's to say?
Matt Cain at 10.
Yeah, so 06, they hadn't drafted Kershaw yet. So we still have James Loney. At that point, Matt Kemp had established himself, at least as a prospect. They had just they traded for Andre Ethier, so I think he might have made it. Jonathan Broxton.
Yep. So Ethier did make it. I had both the Ethier trade and the Mookie trade as being would have come out after this list came out. And I was obviously wrong in both cases. Matt Kemp in 96, under Ethier at 89. Jonathan Broxton at 63. So you were missing a pitcher, a catcher, and an infielder. The pitcher's 55.
Wait, I thought I have 7. Russell Martin is 1, right?
Yes. Sorry.
Isn't that
42. 8? I have Billingsley, LaRoche, Guzman, Martin, Broxton, and Ethier Kemp.
I thought I said another one. I am kind of. Let's see, 2006 though.
Lefty Greg pitcher.
Miller? Not Greg Miller.
Nope.
Albert.
There you go. And possibly not really related to the number one prospect in all of baseball this year.
What? Oh, Blake DeWitt.
Blake DeWitt. wow. Memories.
That's funny.
All right. That was a good one. Except I was shocked at the names you started listing when I had 2020 in my head.
Yep.
All right. Dodgers Rewind? You got one?
Yeah. So it's weird. I don't want to turn this into the let's remember the guy who just died, but this person was so
fine.
So interesting. And sometimes, like, it's also like, it's literally like learning something new about someone you may mm-hmm. not have heard of before. Mm-hmm. So it's honoring them in a way. I just feel bad for possibly not doing it earlier. I just didn't know about them. So I'm sad that this is how I found out. But Eddie Bezinski played for the Dodgers during World War II. He played 147 games for them over a two-year span, 1944 and 45. He died on January 8th in Oregon. He was aged 99. He was listed in one of the obits as the second oldest living major leaguer at the time. There's only one person older than him with the most perfect name possible for this. George Elder. he's 100 years old, a former Browns outfielder. This is from Samantha Swindler's obituary in the Oregonian. Quote, one of his favorite stories was about his start in the major leagues. Rheumatic fever at the age of 4 left Bezinski colorblind and was the reason he wasn't drafted during World War II. Instead, he worked for a mechanical engineering company while also playing in three different AAA teams around Buffalo, New York, where he grew up. During an All-Star game among the AAA teams, a Dodgers scout invited him to join batting practice at Ebbets Field. Bezinski would show up to practice with the team, then change into his street clothes and watch the game from the stands. Now, eventually, again, World War II, rosters depleted, a lot of players off to war, or at least in the service. They said, you know what, we're giving this guy a shot, and they gave him a $5,000 bonus, which was pretty good for the time. He hit 257, 310, 324 in 39 games in 1944. He was only 21. He played mostly second base that year. Came back the next year, played 108 games, played a lot of shortstop. Pee Wee Reese was still in the Navy. For 3 years, he was in the Navy. And when Pee Wee Reese came back in 1946, Bezinski went to the minors. He played the entire year in AA in St. Paul. The Dodgers traded him that December in 1946 for a 30-year-old pitcher named Al Gierhauser. He actually did not pitch for Brooklyn. I believe he played one more major league season after that. Bezinski played briefly for the Pirates in 1947. That was his last major league season, but as was perhaps still the fashion at the time, the minors weren't as structured, at least tethered to the majors, as they are now. He played his next 10 years with the Portland Beavers in AAA in the Pacific Coast League. He actually was elected to the Pacific Coast League Hall of Fame in 2006. He grew up in Buffalo, like was mentioned before. He was childhood friends with Warren Spahn. Also, my favorite fact about Bezinski, I think, he was a concert violinist who played the symphony orchestra at the University of Buffalo. And because of this, of course, players and managers alike called him the Fiddler. Baseball nicknames were a thing back then. This is from Richard Goldstein's New York Times obituary. Soon after his arrival at Ebbets Field, Bezinski was in the Dodger clubhouse in uniform playing Strauss waltzes when manager Leo Durocher, who was evidently skeptical about reports that Bezinski was a professional violinist, walked in. Quote, he stopped and looked at me and said, well, I'll be a son of a bitch, Bezinski said in a 2011 interview with the Times. Quote, while he was shaving, I was right next to him and giving it to him with my violin, Bezinski said. I love it. This is from his Sabre bio. He wore glasses. So this is one of the things he said. Inside, I had the same competitive fire that Michael Jordan, Lou Gehrig, and Joe DiMaggio had, he once told an interviewer. I just didn't look the part, and people didn't like it. Another quote from him. I don't look like a big, strong guy, but I was an Iron Man with Portland. My looks were always against my ability. I looked like a damn doctor or a preacher, and the glasses didn't help. But, man, I had the fire, and I wanted to be a perfectionist. So kudos to you, Eddie Bezinski, for making your name in the majors and being a very cool story. I do have some Eddie Bezinski trivia for you because I'm sure you know all about him.
Yep.
So he hit 13 doubles and 5 triples in his 2 seasons with the Dodgers, but 0 home runs. His 482 plate appearances with Brooklyn is the 7th most in franchise history in the live ball era, that's 1920 to present, for a player with zero home runs with the Dodgers. How many of the top six can you name?
I love this question. I do have a clarifying question. I have some guesses, but clarifying question, just to frame my guesses a little bit. How many are pitchers?
Three of the six.
What? You know, and, I was gonna guess like four. Four or five. So.
I will give you another hint.
Yep.
You've seen.
No, don't do this.
You've seen at least three of these players.
Oh, no. All right. That's not what I want. I wanted like Juan Pierre.
No, he famously hit one.
I remember the one he hit in Florida because he was on my fantasy team at the time. But I couldn't remember one in.
There was one he hit in Pittsburgh, and famously, I believe that I forgot the name's pitcher. I think it was Salas, and he did not pitch another game after that.
This is bringing back memories. All right.
I will say this, that there is someone who's that style of player.
Sure. But not in my era.
No, for
not
sure.
As, yeah. Iconically, slap hitting, ringing the box. All right. Clearing my head. Don Drysdale. He probably hit one.
No, he hit a few. He hit seven Koufax. In a year, I think, twice. No, I believe he had at least one.
Really? Huh, okay. Man, I'm a...
I will give you a hint. Yeah. You're on the right track in this regard, instance. So.
Claude Osteen.
Claude Osteen, he's not here, so I'm assuming he hit one because he would have had way more plate appearances.
Yeah, but how about some more hints? I'm looking at Claude Osteen, by the way, while we do this.
Okay.
I was looking at pitching allowed home runs. I'm like, Claude Osteen, my God, look at this. 249 home runs.
Two played in Brooklyn.
Okay.
One of them is firmly in the Jacob era. One of them is in the Eric Steven blogging era.
Okay.
And two of them played in the 90s, but that didn't necessarily encompass their entire career.
Okay. Hideo?
No.
Claude had six home runs with the Dodgers, by the way. Man, what a return to form. I was doing well, and I even like got a little confidence boost.
So you were on the right track when you said Koufax and Drysdale. I think you should stick with that class of pitcher for a little bit.
I know. I'm
to pick some of these off. I'll give you the especially one who is far and away number one in plate appearances on this list, who is a pitcher.
Yep. Don Sutton.
Yep. 1,423.
So what's funny is you keep giving me that, you're hinting me towards him. I couldn't remember Don Sutton's name. I just couldn't. It just completely bricked. And I see his face, I see his number. I'm like, why can't I remember a name? So I took 10 seconds.
There's another pitcher who is sort of in this level roughly.
Roughly?
That you've seen for sure.
That I've seen for sure. Is this the 90s plus ish pitcher?
Yes. Yes.
Who pitched a lot?
Seen and heard.
What? I'm trying to make Chan Ho.
No, this, I did not. I was not referring to his famous diarrhea quote with the Yankees.
Nope. Tapping out. I got one.
The one you've seen and heard.
Yeah.
Perhaps most recently on Dodgers broadcast is Oral Hershiser. 798 plate appearances. Outfielder named Johnny Cooney was number two on the list.
Should have gotten Oral. Should not have gotten that. We're good.
1935 to 44. Mm-hmm. So the one that I would have said was the closest to Juan Pierre, at least in speed and how he was used, Chad Fonville.
Okay.
575. He was number six. Van Lingle-Mungo, great name. He's the other Brooklyn guy.
Sure.
699 pitcher. And then the other one in the person I covered, Jamie Carroll, two seasons, 924, full-time player.
Yeah, I just don't remember him. Like, I guess he was
not hitting home run, right? Yeah.
Or just like honestly racking up. I mean, I guess yeah. No, that makes sense. No, we're yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah. Well, don't worry.
Should have gotten oral. I'm okay. I wouldn't like maybe. Give me an hour and listing a bunch of names. I maybe eventually would have hit Jimmy Carroll.
You're gonna get some revenge on me now.
Oh, yeah.
I saw these questions. Oh, yeah. I have an idea on some, but I know I'm about to just get racked here. It's gonna be brutal.
And that's because it's time for
Questions from Craig. We love them.
All right, time to
we love
seek
it.
Some
I'm always
revenge.
Off on these.
As you might have already discussed, there was some Dodger news just before the holidays began. Cody Bellinger agreed to a 2022 contract.
Not official. They won't
so
say anything
today's
yet,
trivia but, will have yeah. some aspect of Bellinger to it. And I'm going to quickly open up my cheat sheet. I wonder how I should try to do these before I ask you, and I'll let you know how much you did. Next episode, I'm going to do that, and I'll be honest nice. With how well I do. Most of the time. Sometimes I might lie. Who's to say?
I trust you. Yeah.
I appreciate it. No, I'll keep it real. Since 2010, eight players, including Cody Bellinger, have won both the Rookie of the Year and the MVP award. Can Eric name the other players who achieved that status? This does not include Ryan Braun because he won Rookie of the Year in 2007. And he never won the MVP either.
I was just going to say, it's not Craig's nature to say that, but it would have been hilarious if he said, because Ryan Braun is a filthy cheater or something like that. It would have been so out of character for like the nicest man on earth. Okay, so he said since 2010.
Correct.
Which I can't for the life of me.
This is inclusive
think of, like,
of that.
Oh, like, you know what? It's... For some reason, I had 2011 on the brain, mm-hmm. but I do know that Buster Posey was Rookie of the Year in 2010.
You are correct.
So that's one.
Yep.
So obviously, Chris Bryant.
Yep. maybe the.
I have to do five more.
Yep.
Good Lord. Okay. Let me just mentally do this because this is going to be difficult. I'm having a hard time like thinking of like the MVPs, which is weird. So I'm just gonna circle around them in my head and I'll try to talk it out, but so we have Jose Altuve?
No. Don't think he won Rookie of the Year.
That's yeah, it has to be because he won. Mookie didn't win Rookie of the Year. I don't remember who won MVP that year. Why this
you're,
is
you're done
so
setting d- this in my so I'm happy with that.
Nice. Okay. All right. So
I'm going to simplify this two of these names for you. Who won the MVPs this year?
I don't. Who did win the MVP this year? Bryce Harper won Rookie of the Year.
He did.
I don't remember that. I thought I was thinking he got screwed. So then Mike Trout.
Yep.
So three more.
But not you still haven't named the AL MVP.
Right, but there's three more total, right?
Correct. Like, yeah. I was just letting you know on my previous hint.
For this year?
Yeah.
Who did win this year? This is sad. Like, our good friend Shohei.
Yeah, but you just made a joke in reference to this player.
Yeah. So now there's only two. So let me just try to think this through like a door.
One, actually, because Bellinger. You've said Posey, Trout, Harper, Bryant, Bellinger, Harper, Ohtani. So you have one more.
Wait, Harper's listed twice?
He is listed twice. That's funny. Hold on.
So there's only one more.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yes. That's funny.
Okay.
Why is he listed here twice?
Because he won two MVPs.
So did Trout. Trout won three. So.
Yeah. Miguel Cabrera obviously is in the Braun category because he was previous Rookie of the Year. Connected to Eric Stevens. Shut up, Alexa. That's my girlfriend. Everyone, be quiet. Damn it. That threw me off, you jerk, Alexa. The mere thought of like wondering who won the 2012 MVP. Oh, Andrew McCutchen?
No. Craig's source for this question lists Bryce Harper twice. I think the same paragraph, yeah. Bryce Harper.
Yeah, so 17 was at the World Series.
Let you know, it's an American League player.
All right. I'll let you know. I don't care because I can't think of it. I can't think of it. My brain is mushy. Go ahead.
Jose Abreu.
No, you're fine. Oh, nice. There you okay. go.
Since 2010, eight. Hopefully it's actually eight this time. Players, including Cody Bellinger, have won both the Rookie of the Year and MVP. Oh, no.
Alexa short-circuited both of us.
No, my cheat sheet has the same question twice.
Damn it. This is the rudest person ever. Alexa, shut your mouth.
So, yeah, my cheat sheet had the same question twice. Cody Bellinger, yeah. But my show notes don't. Cody Bellinger has hit 10 or more. The answer is different. So, Cody Bellinger has hit 10 or more home runs in each of his first five seasons since 1992. Seven Dodgers have had six or more seasons with 10 or more home runs. Please list these consistent sluggers.
Okay, so since he said 92... Mm-hmm. I'm saying Eric Karros.
You are correct.
I know he had the 530 home run seasons. He had at least
11 such seasons.
Yeah, I was going to say so many. Piazza did not do it because he did not reach 10 in 98. Only had five. 93 through 97, right?
Yeah, my heart is broken because of the trade joke.
Yep. What? Wait, trade? breaking news. Okay, so I was just stalling there. Okay, so this is the one I didn't look anything up, but I was looking at it and I just started getting mad. But I think this is true. Raul Mondesi.
You are correct.
94
yes,
to 99.
With six on the dot.
And then I was in my head, I was thinking, which year did he get traded? Because he got traded for Sean Green, who did not make it, I don't think, because he was gone by 05.
Sean Green is not on this list, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's my process, and I've wasted a lot of time. So now that I've done that, okay, so now it goes into six or more seasons. Ethier and Kemp.
Yes. 9 and 8, respectively.
Yeah, and then...
So you're missing two or three players with six each.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay, so Justin Turner.
Yep.
Six. Jock Peterson.
Nope. He only had five.
It's 2020.
What a jerk year.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, now... This is weird. Uh,
Wait, did Chris Taylor sneak on this? Did he get 10 and 20?
He did not.
Okay. Yeah, this is rough. I'm just trying to think here. Two more players with six such seasons.
The spans are 99 to 2004 and 13 to 18.
Oh, Beltre.
Yep.
13 to 18. Good. Oh, Puig.
There you go.
Dang. All right.
Bellinger has 133 home runs and 48 stolen bases in his career. If he can find a consistent home run swing in 2022, that's how I say the year, by the way, he could join four other players who, during their post-1991 Dodger careers, were able to hit at least 150 home runs and steal 50 or more bases. Name those power-slash-speed players.
Okay, so Matt Kemp.
Yep.
Is one. So this one I was really struggling with because I don't – I'm going to say – wait.
Okay. I'm waiting.
I forgot. I talked myself into this logically. Oh, so I think I'm going to say Eric Karros, yes. Andre Ethier, no.
You are correct on both.
Okay. So that – yeah, I talked myself into like – I know one of them has a like really low amount of steals, and I'm pretty sure it was Ethier. And I know Karros tried to steal a lot sometimes, and he wasn't that good at it, but he stole enough to get 50, and he was around for a while. Okay, so now I still need two. Sean Green.
Yep.
And then the other 50 steal guy. Oh, God. Okay.
If I say power speed Dodger, who do you think of before? Like Matt Kemp plus. For me, at least, there are two players I always think of.
What? Raul Mondesi?
There you go.
I didn't think he got 150. Okay,
163 nice. Home runs.
Wow. Nice.
Bellinger has 48 stolen bases in 59 attempts. He's one of six LA Dodgers with 48 more stolen bases and an 80% completion rate or better. Who are the other five Dodger, LA Dodger speedsters?
Dave Roberts.
Dave Roberts, 118 stolen bases with an 82% success rate.
Davey Lopes.
Davey Lopes with 418 stolen bases with an 83%, 0.1.
So, man, I thought he was just a little bit lower than 80, but I'm just going to say Maury Wills because
maybe not on the list. So yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, but 48 is not a lot. But I'm trying to think of the like high percentage guys.
The stolen
Steve Sachs?
Nope. The stolen base numbers, not percentage numbers for the three remaining players, are 52, 69, and 100 on the dot.
100. I can't think of it right now some reason.
With an 89.65% stolen base percentage, Eric Davis is number one.
Nice.
In terms of completion. Kirk Gibson. With an 88.462%.
I'm guessing those are the 59 and 62.
Yes. 52 for Eric Davis, 69 for Kirk Gibson.
Sorry.
And then with 100 stolen bases, Mariano Duncan.
Damn. Nice.
With an 80% completion rate on the dot. 100 stolen bases, 25 caught stealing.
I love it.
All right. Eric, your torture is over.
Yay.
We love it. Over the holidays, the latest viral craze, Wordle, has hit the country. I don't know if it's hit the whole country as much as it's hit very online people. Yeah. For myself, it is more of a puzzle than a word game, but in any case, it is a nice distraction. Eric and Jacob, I believe the answer to this question is yes, but have word games, crossword puzzles, Scrabble, Boggle, been a part of your go-to for a pastime or gathering?
Yeah.
I think it's been a long time since I've played Boggle, or Scrabble for that matter, but those have, you know, those were played quite a bit growing up, and just any sort of like, you know, I guess, does Pictionary count? There's a drawing element, but you're also doing, it's like words. So like, I don't know.
I don't think it's a word game.
I do, to pass the time sometimes, I do crossword puzzles on my phone. I had a Sudoku phase for a while. I think I still have the app. I just haven't played it in a while. But yeah, like it's more of an occasional thing for me now.
Do you Wordle? Are you a Wordle person?
I was a little bit of a latecomer to it, but yes.
So my bedtime is right around midnight, which is when it rolls over. So I do the Wordle right before bed, and then I doze off, which has been good.
So I agree with Craig though about it being a more of a puzzle.
I think it's a nice little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, Wheel of Fortune kind of knowledge. Like, right. So
yes, exactly.
I love crosswords, but I'm not people are way better at them. Like I just doing them my own, I'm like, I'm pretty good at these. And then you see people who are like doing the Saturday New York Times in 10 minutes or whatever. I'm just I can't do Saturday. But that would be, and I know there have been other people who have done this, an interesting way to see how long does it take me if I try really hard to be able to do the Saturday crossword puzzle.
My grandma used to do written crosswords. She'd go through those books that you see in the magazine aisle at the grocery store. She would just power through those. She had a crossword dictionary that was like the most thumbed through book in history. it was amazing. Checking stuff and all that. It was pretty good. But yeah.
No. When we lose Major League Baseball for the year, we'll start talking about crosswords.
It's going to be a crossword podcast. We'll have Mike Piscina on.
It was back in 2009 when the Dodgers had five players with at least five triples. Casey Blake, Rafael Furcal, Orlando Hudson, Matt Kemp, Juan Pierre. Casey Blake could the 2020
he played third, he hit it to third. That's what he did.
Could the 2022 Dodgers, excuse me, the 2022 Dodgers match that feat?
That's right.
They have a good trio of Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, and Chris Taylor. Cody Bellinger did hit seven in 2019, and Gavin Lux could also hit that many. What do you two think?
They're not. Five is a lot. So I will say this. It happens to be next to me, the Bill James Handbook for 2022 I have in front of me. A lot of the stuff in there is useful, at least as a reference, as well as some essays. But
I don't think any of it's useful.
You
know what I mean?
It's
useful as as knowing how many.
It's useful for it. Right now because I'm going to drop a fun fact. No. So it's notoriously tough to hit triples at Dodger Stadium. In this book, it has sort of a park factor of sorts. From 2019-21, there were 29 triples hit in Dodgers home games. That includes both by the Dodgers and by their opponents. In road games, 61 triples. So, it's very difficult. So they came up with sort of a triples index, if you will, of 49, where 100 is average and anything over is more, think of it like an OPS plus type of a thing. That's the second lowest in the majors during that time. Only the Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, which is at 44, is lower. So I just think even with those guys, and I was looking, I think Mookie has hit five on the dot a few times, but still it's rough. It's hard getting, I think they're going to have a hard time getting 3 to 5 triples,
yep,
let alone five. So maybe not even their own fault. It's just really hard to hit triples at Dodger Stadium, and that sort of cuts people off.
The way you called it useful made me feel like if someone needs to go survive in the wilderness, what's the most useful book I can bring? Let me tell you,
Bill James Handbook. Look, well, I will say this: if we're talking in the woods, this is 634 pages. That think of the fires you could make with this thing.
You can knock at something out with it. Throw it at someone. That'd be good.
That's right. If a bear comes at you, just hit it, and the bear will go down. That's a proven fact.
Hearing the Cheers theme song many times over the weekend, thanks Applebee's, sparks this question: name some of your favorite TV theme songs.
So I made notes on this so I wouldn't forget. The one, these are the ones that immediately came to mind. I'm certain there are more. But Greatest American Hero, obviously. Bosom Buddies, which happens to be my favorite Billy Joel song. Not, it's not called Bosom Buddies, it's My Life. But Perfect Strangers, which I loved growing up. Standing Tall. And then Golden Girls as well. Another useful fun fact here. When the Dodgers won the 88 World Series in Oakland in Game 5, as soon as the final pitch went off the stadium, the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum started playing Thank You for Being a Friend over the, like, for the fans who were, like, exiting the stadium. So Golden Girls theme as the Dodgers were winning a World Series. It was beautiful. But those are great. But my number one all time by far, This Week in Baseball, both the opening and the closing theme, just wonderful. I want a biography of my life with that as the score. Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah.
I have a lot of answers to this, but there were some real quick hits. The Georgia the Jungle and Super Chicken theme, specifically Weird Al's Georgia the Jungle. But my all-time favorite is, it's like quasi-obscure. It's The Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, which is a cartoon on I watched it on Cartoon Network. But it's like, has really bad kind of, not bad, but like early CGI, like kind of like green graphics. But the theme song is a banger, as they say. Just a lot, like it's a, like this kind of like heavy rock song. It's awesome. Big, big fan. I'm gonna look it up now.
Do you, wait, before we get to the last one, I'm just going to sing part of this to you, and I'm going to ask you if you know what it's from. Uh-oh. Overture, hit the lights. This is it, our night of nights. And oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
I do not.
Do you know? That's the Looney Tunes theme. Yeah.
There you go.
God, that was good. Yeah.
All right, final question.
Excellent rendition.
It's about ham. I know Eric recently cooked a ham, and that gave me this week's ending question. While ham is fine as a main dish, it is also tasty as breakfast or lunch.
Is it?
So please, I'm ignoring that because yes, it is. So please rank your choices of favorite meals to have ham. Mine would be breakfast, ham and eggs, lunch, ham sandwich, and then dinner. Also, I can't recall if Jacob has ever been to Spain, but that is one place where I want to have their famous version.
Spanish ham.
Iberica. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to look it up now. But I've been to Barcelona and Iberico, jamón Iberico. And I had that in Barcelona many times, you know, as often as I can. An absolutely incredible food city. I think Tokyo is maybe the only city I think I had better food in than Barcelona. Just consistent, really, really good stuff, including the jamón. For me, on the other question, I'm going lunch, and then breakfast and dinner are so close to me because like a bite of like mac and cheese and ham, I don't know, Easter or Christmas dinner, it just doesn't get better, except in a ham sandwich because ham sandwiches are delicious.
So my immediate thought for this was, it was going to be breakfast by a mile, but then I thought about it. Breakfast, it's awesome. Like, I'm more, when I cook eggs or something, I almost never do the eggs by themselves and then, like, plate it up with different things. I just put veggies and meat or whatever and then scramble the eggs over that. And it's not quite an omelet because I rarely flip it at the correct time. It's just a scramble of miscellaneous stuff. And ham is wonderful. It's perfect for that. So I do love it there. But I'm not even going to say lunch or dinner is better. Whoa. I'm going to say random sneaking into the fridge sandwich.
That's pretty damn good.
With leftover ham is the best possible way to
have
it.
You know, I like this answer a lot. Yeah, just to add a little of my logic to it is like I prefer turkey sandwiches like my go-to meat.
Oh,
but
you need
to add... it needs to be built around, I think, a little bit. Whereas a ham, you don't need much to make a ham sandwich work.
I would say, turkey, because it also can be very dry after Thanksgiving or whatever.
Sure.
And so you would need to put, like, a mustard. If you like mayo, you could put mayo or whatever. With ham, you could just
grab a Hawaiian roll, cut it in half, slap like two pieces of ham, put it together. That's it. And it's by itself a gourmet delicacy, yeah. And it's wonderful.
Add a little bit of, for me, Swiss and mustard, spicy mustard, and then, yeah, you're really good to go.
I love it. So, yeah, we're going to we're gonna go have some ham now. We're recording this, a rare night record for us. Yeah. So we're going to have some late night ham. That's also good ham. But, yeah, while you guys are eating ham and listening to this, think about the labor negotiations. Think about the labor crisis and think about ham. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.